I'm Dr. Sarah, a licensed chiropractor.
And I'm Val, clinical research enthusiast and international board-certified lactation consultant.
We are passionate about helping you navigate women's health and wellness topics naturally.
We bring the information and options
so you can make empowered choices.
This is the Empowered Women podcast. Just a reminder, the information contained in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness or be taken as medical advice. Always check with your healthcare provider for medical advice. What are we going to talk about today, Dr. Sarah?
I don't know. You tell me. You said you wanted to interview me.
So this was my idea for this week. I really have been wanting to talk to Dr. Sarah about chiropractic care.
Honestly, I'm nervous.
No. Why? For infants and babies and children and just some of the big ticket items that it's used for, because I will tell you, there are still a lot of people and there's still a lot of stigma in the real world about this type of care and what it can do. And when practitioners recommend it, parents like really don't like that sometimes.
No.
Like they don't understand it. They don't like it. They don't. I actually had someone tell me they went to this was like through the grapevine, but someone went to see an IBCLC who's local, who's amazing, and she recommended chiropractic care. And the girl was complaining, like, why would my baby need a massage?
Oh my God, no.
Not only that, but I know people who don't really think investing in that type of regular wellness is really worth the money. Now, you and I, you know, we are of the school of thought that you pay for your wellness along the way and that prevents sickness and disease and doctor's visits and co-pays and medications and throwing money at those things.
Right.
And that truly is a mindset shift, and it's something that you have to kind of, I think, get over. But it works. And I mean, you know, Dr. Sarah is a licensed chiropractor. You all know that, but she's an expert and she handles pregnant women and babies and children and infants all the time at her practice.
It's my favorite.
And she loves it. So I think it's really important that maybe we address some of those myths and misconceptions and to talk about like what it can really be used for.
I think the biggest thing that the general population has to understand is that chiropractic was never meant to be something that strictly involved pain relief. In fact, it wasn't. Like when it was created, when the thought process behind it came about, it was a way to be utilized within the medical community in order to have the body function at its optimal level. Okay. Now, in the 1980s, there was a big drive from the medical community. It was probably earlier than that. Big drive in the medical community to actually de-license chiropractors because they were getting such good results. Like, let's be serious. When you try to shut down a certain profession, it's because it's affecting a larger one. So,
or a natural product, there's some type of something is being threatened.
It's something profits being threatened. It came down to such a big divide. Now that divide is getting smaller. I have a lot of OBs who refer their pregnant moms to us more than I think I've ever seen before.
I will tell you, in my opinion, and I'm not really any type of expert, but there are more medical professionals that support and understand chiropractic and refer patients to chiropractors than there are people out walking around in the general public that understand what it is, what it does, and or believe in it, which is kind of crazy. Like,
Well, this is the thing, is that those people have been told by their profession or their providers early in life that they should never see a chiropractor. Now, the problem with this is, you know, whatever year that was, I'll look it up and I'll add it to the show notes. It came down to the point where in that whole legislative drive to delicense chiropractors, it came out that obviously that didn't happen. We're licensed medical professionals, that doctors cannot talk to their patients. Medical providers cannot talk to their patients about seeing a chiropractor or not.
So people find it for themselves and try it or see what it could be used for.
Well, meaning if your doctor tells you to not see a chiropractor, they can be sued. They're not allowed to tell you that you cannot see a chiropractor because they're practicing outside of their scope. And they don't understand.
They're not doctors.
So if they, it would just like, it would be like me going and recommending a very specific surgery or medication because I don't do that. Mm-hmm. So when somebody is telling you this comes to anything, right? If someone's telling you not to do something, you have to question why, and you have to think about who that person is and what their actual background on the subject is, because they don't know. So whenever you think about that in terms of like pain, like that's one thing. But then when you think about it in regards to like a pediatric case, they absolutely do not know. There is no traditional manipulation with pediatric care. It's very sustained, gentle contact. Mm-hmm. Babies do not have the muscle groups or attachments or joint placement that an adult has.
People think you're going to like grip up their infant or their 8-year-old and you know, do what they've seen like you do with an adult. Like it is not, the misconception isn't, that's not what happens. Like right. It is not what happens. Like you said, it's very gentle. You guys use you can talk more about the torque release if you want down the line in the episode, but unless you're my daughter who like wants her back cracked every time
they're there. Yeah, I love
we like the hardcore stuff.
But she's also at an age where her joints can handle that.
Yeah. He doesn't get cracked like that. Yeah.
Because he doesn't have the joint positioning in order for us to even do that. So there's gradual increase in pressure in chiropractic care. So we have very, very low force, gentle techniques. And then we have, you know, very high velocity adjustments. So those are your more traditional adjustments that you're going to see online. If you strip it all the way back to a very low force technique, that's a lot of like ligament sustained contact. And I'll use that on adults that should not be manually treated, because an adult, there's some adults that should not have manual adjustments. Mm-hmm. It just is what it is. So when a baby comes in, a newborn who might be suffering from colic or acid reflux, latching issues, torticollis, which by the way, all of those come back to really like one segment, and we can dive into that if we want to.
Oh, I do.
But
it's the ear infection segment too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So all of that comes back to sustained gentle pressure on ligament attachment sites, or gentle pressure on the bone, because a baby is highly intelligent. You know this, Val. Like, what happens when a baby's born and they start creeping up the body?
Yeah.
They know what to do.
Yeah.
They take outside awareness, they use it themselves, and they figure it out. An adjustment is the same thing. You're putting an impulse in, the baby is accepting it and making adjustments. It's the same way an adult does, except you take all the mental dysfunction out of it.
Yeah.
And the lifetime of like physical trauma, emotional trauma, chemical trauma. A baby doesn't have, most of the time, does not have that yet. Unless, you know, mom had a very stressful pregnancy and maybe like cortisol addicted, and that can lead to colic or, you know, unfortunately, fetal alcohol syndrome, things like that. So unless they had a super traumatic coming into this world or intrauterine, they're gonna receive an adjustment really quickly, and it doesn't take as long for a baby to adapt.
Now, isn't there, so there's two schools of thought, or mm-hmm. I've heard different things about this, but I think the consensus is the same. When a baby is born, they should be assessed to see if they need an adjustment. Now, not all babies are going to have a traumatic birth or a long birth or a C-section, which I think is equivalent to like a third stage whiplash or something. I can't remember what you guys always say.
Grade two.
So like not every single baby might have a ton of issues, but I'm going to go out on a limb here just because from what I see and say that most babies do need to have some type of adjustment to get their body and spine and nervous system back functioning properly and in proper alignment.
Yeah. So if we think about the actual school of thought for why chiropractors exist, and like I kind of started down this path and I diverted, it wasn't for pain relief, it's for whole body function. So when mm-hmm. a chiropractor is assessing the spine, I don't care about the bones in your spine. Like I just don't. I care about what they're protecting. They're protecting your nervous system. So just like if, you know, you dislocate your shoulder is not going to function correctly. Now, if you subluxate your spine, it's going to put pressure on those very, very, very delicate nervous system structures that can affect where they come out to. So, and the neck, it can be, you know, the head, the ears, the eyes, the nose, the throat, the arms, the hands. In the mid back, that goes to all your vital organs. Mm-hmm. So babies with colic, let's say they had a C-section, grade 2 whiplash injury can occur during a C-section, and that's going to pull tension all the way down the spine. So that can create acid reflux later, like a lot of spit up, things like that. But then the nerves in the low back go down to like bowel. So babies with constipation or older kids with bedwetting issues, but then down to like reproduction organs, legs, mm-hmm. legs, feet, knees, blah, 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 blah. So again, yes, we care that people are in pain and that like baby might be in distress, but why is it happening? Right. So whenever babies are born, it's so important to get them assessed despite having actual quote issues, because when we think about birth itself, the most non-passive way through birth is through the vaginal canal, hopefully, honestly, unassisted, right? So the only way you're going to get an unassisted birth is like at home, mm-hmm. where you're...
I want you to say not an excessively long labor either, because when that baby is in that birth canal or you are in labor for 24 to 40 plus hours, that's a long time, and there are a lot of symptoms that will present in baby sometimes afterwards.
Absolutely. And like especially when baby's in the birth canal for a long time, it's going to put a lot of pressure on like the cranial structures, which can affect the upper part of the cervical spine or the upper part of the neck. So, you know, if best case scenario, no interruptions, very quick birth, you know, you don't pull or traction your baby's head out. Yeah, maybe get them checked, because maybe during your pregnancy you had low back pain, the uterus was tight and can cause a subluxation.
When I watch birth videos and I see practitioners yanking, like pulling babies out of the vagina, I literally want to vomit. First off, you are doing like your pelvic floor. You should not be pulling like a 5 to 10 pound baby out of somebody's vagina, those pelvic floor muscles like that. But again, like you just see what the baby go, like, leave it alone. It's going to come out. It was meant to come out. I mean, now if you're stuck, different. I mean, if the baby is stuck, that's different. But you see a lot of times, like, we talk about this, the hands-off birthing process. Yes. And it's just, everybody's got to get their hands sorry, in the vagina. That's what it feels like.
Well, and this is the thing. Most practitioners are right-handed. So whenever baby's coming out, they're usually directing and tractioning with right hand. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time, we're finding a right atlas subluxation. So the atlas is the very first bone in the neck. It controls 90% of cervical or neck rotation. So when you turn your head from left to right, that's your atlas moving. Mm-hmm. If your doctor is right-handed and is assisting in by tractioning baby out of the vagina and from the womb, you're putting a lot of pressure on atlas. Mm-hmm. So atlas is the most common subluxation we find. It is the most common reason babies have ear infections. The most common reason babies have latching issues. Mm-hmm. Because of how closely that bone sits from the ear canal and how much tension it can put on the jaw when it is subluxated. Mm-hmm. So when Eli was born, Mike's job was to see if the provider was pulling, uh-huh. right? And yeah. which hand they were pulling with. Lo and behold, she was left-handed. She was tractioning a lot with the left hand. Eli had a chronic left atlas subluxation for like months.
Yeah.
Months, and it wouldn't go away. Now that has a lot to do with like tie issues, because when you have ties in the mouth, it creates tension up above and it can play with that atlas subluxation a lot, meaning that to get the tie to resolve or to create less tension in the mouth, you have to resolve the atlas, but the atlas can hold on because the ties are so tight. And so that's where right. working with another profession is essential.
Yeah. And what Dr. Sarah is referring to are tethered oral tissues in the mm-hmm. mouth. So a lot of times they can present as a tongue tie, it's called. So the frenulum that attaches to the tongue to the floor of the mouth can be extremely tight, or just the placement of it can affect feeding. It can be at the lip. So you see like the upper frenulum on that upper lip is attached somewhere along the line. It depends on where it's attached. It depends how thick it is. It depends how tight it is. It doesn't always mean baby's going to have a feeding issue.
Right.
And then there can be what's called buccal or buccal ties, which are actually cheek ties, and they're not as common, but they can present in babies that have other tethered oral tissue. But for everyone listening, a lot of the time, and I'm going to say this, a very vast generalization, if there's a tight frenulum, or there's a lot of tethered oral tissue, there's tension in the baby's body, like Dr. Sarah right. is saying. And this is why it's important to take like a team-centered approach with your right. infant when the baby is having challenges. And it doesn't just have to be feeding challenges. Like Dr. Sarah mentioned, colic, reflux,
ear infections,
all that kind of stuff, ear infections. Like it's not just, those are symptoms, guys. They're not diagnoses. Okay. Yeah. Like a lot of times they're getting diagnosed and treated with something and you're not addressing the underlying issue. So my personal opinion is that babies need to have fascial work too, depending mm-hmm. on how much tension is presenting. But remember, baby was cooped up in a small spot for 10 plus months and they can present with a lot of tension, maybe if they're not even having issues. So
I mean, if I'm not seeing mom during pregnancy and I just see baby come in, half of my consult is pregnancy and delivery questions mm-hmm. because babies were born to function. Their main goal is to thrive, right? So when we have all these other things going on, it's not because baby's broken. It's not because baby's sick all the time. It's because there is something dysfunctional going on that's causing the inability for something so natural to occur. Your ear draining and clearing bacteria out is so natural. Mm-hmm. And if something's preventing that from happening, it's because there's some kind of dysfunction going on. Now, I really feel like I should like posted a picture of what Atlas is, or if you want to look it up, A-T-L-A-S, Atlas. So your Atlas bone has these two little knobs that sit on the end of it. So, and because your Atlas rotates and it will also glide from right to left, if it's shifted due to like unforeseen forces, assisted delivery, C-section delivery, or maybe baby was in a position where their head was constrained during pregnancy, it's going to create that first subluxation or misalignment of the Atlas. And like I had mentioned a little bit previously, Atlas sits millimeters from the eustachian tube. So if it's shifted, and a subluxation is only millimeters of movement, if it shifts to the point where it is putting pressure on the eustachian tube, you can imagine it kinking that eustachian tube up. And it doesn't allow for the eustachian tube to open efficiently in order for it to drain bacteria down through. So you're getting a blockage from a vertebra that people don't even associate with the inner ear. If I were to tell an ear, nose, and throat doctor, this is not draining because the Atlas is there, they'd be like, those are two different regions. Why would you even think that? But the anatomy makes sense.
Some of them are open. Yeah.
Some of them will. Yeah.
I actually, I'll tell you guys a little bit about my story. So I found a really great ENT in high school, and she was kind of open to that and keeping inflammation down so that the eustachian tubes don't, and treating allergies. She was like, you got to take like a root cause approach because you've had way too many ear surgeries. Like there's nothing else to do for you.
Right.
So I had chronic ear infections as a child. I had tubes 5 times, pretty much like back to back. I think when I was 9, my last set fell out, but I have significant hearing loss. I mean, significant. Especially in the right ear, and a lot of scar tissue is a problem for that. And God bless my mother. Like, she feels so bad. She's like, I wish I knew about the allergist sooner. Like, blah, blah. But they didn't know about chiropractic. So my grandfather actually was a chiropractor, and we used to get treated all the time by him for like random back pain and like all this other stuff. So our family's always been very open to it, but I don't think they had the data then. You know, that they do now on that type of connection.
Right.
So when Bianca was I've been obsessed with preventing ear infections in my kids. Like, I'll just flat out like everybody that, because it's very traumatic. I mean, I can literally remember being held down for surgery, like as a small child. And when she was close to 2 years old. And we went for a little respiratory bug just to make sure see how her chest was. And they found an ear infection. And I was like, oh shit. I'm like, no, no, no. So what did I do? I asked around to my holistic friends and I was like, what do I have to do? Right. So that's when I found the practice that you're at now. I left the doctors and I basically said, we'll be back in a week to get checked. They wanted to give me an antibiotic and I quoted AAP guidelines, which was a watch and wait approach at that time. And I think they were a little baffled. And I said, like, well, how bad? Because I said, you're not following. I said, are the guidelines not X, Y, and Z from the Academy of, you know, American Academy of Pediatrics? And she was an amazing practitioner. And she was like, you know what? I'll write you the script. You don't have to fill it. Just come back in a week and we'll check it. I was like, okay, good. Then we're on the same page. Cause I'm not giving this to my kid. Like, we're not getting it. We did. We went to the chiropractor and I used oils and she's never had one since. And neither has Jude, but we take a very preventative approach, you know, with doing that. So I want to share my story so that people hear that on here and you know how profound it is. Mm-hmm. But coming from someone that has had a lot of ear issues, like that's huge for us. We don't mess around. We get adjusted regularly. And Sarah, maybe you can talk. I think you did talk about this, but in babies and children, the eustachian tubes are positioned differently in the Yes. in the head. So maybe you can talk about that, because a lot of people say, oh, well, kids outgrow them. Well, there's a reason why that happens.
First of all, I hate all terms of like, oh, it's an allergy they outgrew. Oh, it's like kids kids don't just grow out of things. They grow into other things.
Correct. If it's not addressed.
So if it's not addressed. So big, yes, kids eustachian tubes are more horizontal than adults.
Yeah.
So it's harder for them to drain. But there's this big practice in right outside of Chicago, who I've done some pediatric courses through. They're amazing. They see all kinds of like special cases, kids with special needs. But one of their big topics is the perfect storm. So kids that end up with like raging bull, like ADD, ADHD, wired kids later in life almost always have a history of colic, ear infections, latching issues. Hmm. And it's because specifically of that atlas. Mm-hmm. So because a portion of your brainstem actually extends down through atlas, your brainstem is directly affected whenever atlas is subluxated. And it can cause brain chemical instability, and that can cause fight or flight response, which leads to like ADD, ADHD, kids that are suffering from those things. But as far as like the ear infection is concerned and how it's shaped differently, like we said, kids don't grow out of it. Yes, that angle changes as you become an adult, but the atlas subluxation will remain the same. So where ear infections eventually clear up, now you have a kid with chronic respiratory infections because that drainage issue is still a thing, which leads to sinus infections, chest infections. Chest infections, we skipped something. The ear infections can lead to like tonsillitis, mm-hmm. because then you're infecting the throat constantly because of that insufficiency to drain. So ear tubes become a tonsillectomy. And now that the tonsils aren't preventing that infection, that's when it becomes like chronic respiratory infections or asthma, allergies, and like older kids. And it's because we never addressed the atlas to begin with. So if the atlas was addressed, it would stop those infections at the source and not continue to trend throughout the entire body.
Yeah, there's so much on this. And I mean, we could do a whole episode on ear infections, but I would like to put a little plug here for parents to make sure you are fully educated on what you're putting on and in your children, mm-hmm. And make sure you're getting full informed consent and make sure that you're weighing risk versus benefits, because one of for everything out there that rhymes with vaccine, every single one that you put in your children, one of the top side effects is ear infections.
Yep.
So, you know, the schedule that we had when we were five is not the same as it is today. So yeah. I would just throw that out there, not saying pros or cons with anything, but make sure you're doing your research and make sure you're educating yourselves, because if that is a chronic problem for you, you might need to take a different approach with how you're
scheduling.
Yes. I'm not saying yes or no either way. I'm just saying make sure you educate yourself, because that is a big piece of information that is left out that I think affects a lot of people.
Well, let's go back to what you were even saying about AAP guidelines. Like, how many people mm-hmm. are prescribed an antibiotic, do the antibiotic, it doesn't work.
Well, and if you look at the AAP guidelines, it will say that 80% of ear, it's like a very high number, 80%
viral
or more are viral, and they should not be treated with an antibiotic. But right. you go to the doctor and they go by practitioners, typically what I'm reading, it goes by severity of symptoms. So if the ear is bulging and the child's in pain or they're super ill, they're just automatically prescribing an antibiotic. But this is where the cycle just keeps going and going and going and going. And if you're not aware of what happens to your gut health after you take an antibiotic, you know, it just keeps, it's not addressing the underlying cause, like Sarah said.
Right. And then, you know,
God,
if we're talking about affecting gut health, then that's where we see like kids with chronic ear infections turn into kids with constipation or severe diarrhea because their gut is no longer, you know, as fulfilled as it was prior to that round of antibiotics that may not have been needed. And I can't say whether or not, but I, like Vahad said, it's a very high percentage of ear infections that are actually viral in nature. And if, even if you're prescribed an antibiotic, you don't even know if it's the right strain that's going to respond to that antibiotic, so if because you, there is no sample taken.
Yes, you're so tip, what's supposed to happen, and this doesn't happen in clinical practice, and I don't know if it's because they just think it's ridiculous or they don't want to wait because they need to prescribe something proactively, or
I think not they feel pressured because mom's there with their kid and they want to leave
sick. Yeah. And like, I don't even know if this is covered by insurance, but what's supposed to happen is a swab should be taken of the ear. And for those of you that aren't familiar with microbiology, it should be plated, like sent to a lab and plated, and see what bacteria, if it's a bacteria, is even causing the infection, and then thus treat it from there with the appropriate round of antibiotics or the appropriate antibiotic for that strain. If it's viral, if you shouldn't even be given an antibiotic. Unfortunately, you've got to resolve it another way and find something that's going to get to the root cause of it.
Well, if you think about even that procedure in itself, just by taking a swab and plating it, you're taking a watch and wait approach.
Yeah.
And if you do need the antibiotic, then you've waited the appropriate amount of time and you have exactly what you need to treat it. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, get that kid adjusted. Flush the ear out. Start getting it moving in the right direction so that the body can start handling the infection in a more natural approach. Because your body is incredible. We talk about it all the time. It's incredibly intelligent. If it's given the right tools, it will fight the infections more appropriately.
So I want to like drive home a couple things you said before I ask you something else. One, chiropractic adjustment, for those of you that haven't picked up on this yet, is more about your nervous system functioning appropriately and ensuring that then the organs and organ systems that are connected to those nerves and your nervous system, your brain, everything else, is functioning appropriately. So a lot of time it's about interference to those things in your body. And that's really what chiropractic is addressing. Yes, it's there for the physical things and the discomfort and the pain. And so somebody that works out a lot, I love it for that type of stuff. You know I need to be in alignment sometimes or I'm out of alignment, but it's not always just for my hip pain or my back pain or my neck pain, right? Like yeah. It's really for full body wellness. And like Sarah said, again, we talk about this a lot, but everything's connected. So, you know, like she was saying, down the line, a lot of times those children will develop, you know, emotional challenges or ADHD or ADD, you know, it's all about the nervous system. And there's a lot of talk now about regulating the nervous system. Mm-hmm. So I feel like chiropractic is like the perfect little like scrub brush for regulating that thing.
I feel like it's so wild that we talk about like neuro imbalances with kids, yet we don't talk about the fact that like chiropractic has always been this and it should absolutely be incorporated in those patient care cases. So, what was I gonna say? Oh, this is like the most basic way, if you've never seen a chiropractor, to think about like that whole body approach that Val was talking about. Everybody knows what sciatica is, mm-hmm. right? Like almost everybody knows what sciatica is. It's pain that goes down your leg, and most often people can't associate that with the low back. Well, the nerves in your thoracic spine or your mid back, where do they go? They go to your organs. They go to everything in your abdomen. So if those are not functioning appropriately, you're not going to feel pain because they don't have a high threshold of like pain nerve bubbles. It's going to look like insulin resistance. It's going to look like
period problems.
It's going to look like slow digestive system. because you're not going to get pain output or pain input responses from that portion of your nervous system until it's like too late. Or not too late, but so severe that now you're probably having like bleeding or, you know, sugar crashes, things. Those are like off the top of my head, but you have to think about the fact that, like, if we take a nerve that actually has all three portions, muscle, organ, and sensory or pain, 10% of that nerve bundle is pain. 40% is probably like muscular function. The other 40% is organ. If you have all three outputs, you're not going to feel pain until you get absolute pressure on that sensory portion.
Yeah, pain is like the last thing to tell you that something is wrong. You know, you
and it's usually the first to go away.
Yeah, you have things brewing for a long time before you feel like discomfort. I mean, think about people when they're diagnosed with even cancer. Like, by the time you have pain or discomfort, that's usually when you go and get it looked at. If you haven't been doing preventative stuff and you then find something. So it's like,
but if a baby is screaming out in pain and in like colicky, cannot calm down, can't regulate nervous system, can't bring themselves out of it, if they're in pain already, it means that something is pushing on that sensory portion and that muscular portion of that area enough that is triggering a response. And the only way to clear that out is to actually assess and make sure that they have gotten a baseline assessment so that you know where to go from there. No practitioner is going to give a baby a year-long care plan with 80 visits. Like, that's ridiculous. Maybe there are some out there. I don't know. I'm sorry if I've offended you, but I would never do that because
they were babies are quicker, right, Sarah?
So quickly. And then, you know, we take it from there as a wellness approach, because with every milestone and with everything they learn, new patterns emerge. You want babies. I mean, the only reason that we, you know, walk the way we walk, talk the way we talk, do the things we do is from an ingrained pattern response from childhood. Mm-hmm. I mean, we always go back to childhood traumas and things like that because they're ingrained responses. Well, if your baby was subluxated from birth and now we're having, you know, writing issues, speech issues, you have 6 years, 7 years, 8 years that you're working from. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting them assessed at the beginning and saying, oh, you know, this will take a few visits and then we'll get them checked on a regular basis as they're learning new things. If we fell the amount of times in a week that a toddler learning to walk
every day and hits their head, I know.
The amount of bruises on Eli just from like playing hard.
I know.
If adults did that, yeah, they would be seen. But we just, kids will grow out of it. No, they don't.
They grow into bigger issues. I know. I feel the same way. I want to say this too, because I think this is an important piece. And we talk about this a lot when we have practitioners on, and you're a practitioner and I'm a practitioner, that we have the choice of whether or not we can or cannot take insurance, or whether our services are covered by insurance. People get very hung up in the money and the financial cost and the insurance aspect of this. My insurance covers 52 visits. My insurance covers 25 visits. Now, we're very fortunate this day and age because most insurance companies cover chiropractic care, mm-hmm. and they cover a really decent number of visits. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you might find a chiropractor you love that takes insurance.
Right.
And I know, like, and the practice that Sarah's at, they told me that in the beginning, like, don't get hung up on the number of visits, because we're going to talk about a care plan. And by the time that number of visits is even like covered, you know, you still have like another half of the year to get it. Just don't worry about it. Like, what's covered is covered, and what's not is not. But what I want to say to people is, if you do not invest in your wellness, I said this earlier in the episode, you're going to be forced to take time and have to invest time and money in your sickness. You will. And that's for your kids too.
I mean, the practice I own with Mike that I'm not working at right now, right. his in-office rates are either lower than a copay.
Right.
Or the same amount as a copay. It's very rare that somebody's copay is lower than that, mm-hmm. first of all. So if you want to use your insurance because you're paying premiums, but you're still going to pay that copay, and it's the same price as paying your out-of-pocket. I never dictate the care that I recommend to someone based on insurance because it's not what people need.
It's not responsible practice. I think we can both agree on that.
When somebody comes in, they fill out what's called an ACN for visits. So what you do is you come in, you're like, hey, I have neck pain. It's a 3 whenever, or it's moderate when I do this. It's mild when I do this. Someone who's not even a practitioner grades that and says, oh, your insurance recommends, or you only get 30 visits a year, but based on what you said, we're only going to give you 8. And it's like, you can't let someone that doesn't even A, know you, B, seen you, C, know your case, make recommendations for you. Mm-hmm. It's the cheat that insurance has come up with. And for kids, most insurances say that it's experimental and they won't cover anyways. So it's awful because a child has a brain developing nervous system and needs to hit milestones. So yeah, they absolutely need to be checked. However, they don't understand. And we as a profession need to do better. We just do.
Well, and I want to, because you and I covered, I feel like, a lot of topics and things that chiropractic can address or help or support in children and babies and infants. But what are some other things, Sarah, can you think of maybe off the top of your head that we didn't talk about that really it can help or it can support in children and infants and even adolescents?
So the biggest segment, I mean, like you've heard me say Atlas 8,000 times mm-hmm. on this episode. If you take one thing away from this, and the amount of times I say this in my practice is insane. So it sounds so basic to me to even like say it out loud. But like I had said previously in this episode, the Atlas contains a portion of your brainstem. Mm-hmm. When it shifts, just like everybody understands the concept of a quote pinched nerve, or a nerve that's being compressed because of something putting pressure on it. Your brainstem will be affected the same way if Atlas is subluxated. So when the brainstem has pressure on it, the brainstem controls sleep patterns, brain chemistry, respiration, digestion, and some functions of the circulatory system. So those are your major, major, major systems in your body. So kids that aren't sleeping, kids that have nightmares, sensory issues, behavioral issues, bedwetting, digestion problems, all those can be related directly back up to Atlas because of its involvement with the brainstem. Another thing you want to consider is that there are 12 cranial nerves that do not exit through the spine. They exit through somewhere in the skull, one of them being the vagus nerve. Mm. And if ever, just recently, in the last like 3 years?
Vagus nerve has blown up. I know.
It's like fast fashion. Like all of a sudden it's important. No, like the vagus nerve has always been important.
We know. Okay. Again, I feel like we follow tons of people that talk about this stuff, but I think for a lot of people listening, they're probably like,
vagus nerve is V-A-G-U-S. It exits out of the base of the skull. And if you look at anatomy, it exits very, very, very closely to the atlas. So if there's any rotation in the atlas that is coming close to that vagus nerve, just like a nerve in the lower part of the neck will affect the hand or carpal tunnel, the vagus nerve will respond in two different ways. Send you into a huge fight or flight response. So kids that are go, 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 can't settle down, can't focus on anything, might be, you know, what's that one? ODD? Oppressive. It's like kids that can't handle input from adults, essentially. ODD. Why can't I think of it?
Oh, wow. You actually labeled that as something? I mean, oh, yeah.
Hold on. Sorry, people. I should know this, but honestly, this one makes me
sad. I don't even know what that is. I've not heard of that.
Oppositional defiant disorder is a behavior in which a child displays a pattern of angry or cranky mood, defiant or combative behavior, vindictiveness towards people in authority. So,
well, I mean, I feel that way sometimes, but I'm not a child. So am I ODD or should I be like labeled something else?
But if you're in fight or flight all the time, of course you're going to like respond in irrational behaviors. Now, yeah. When a child is irrational, like vindictive and is in go, 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 fight or flight all the time, they have to come down from that. So mm-hmm. Give somebody raging emotion for a decade, and guess what happens? They're going to fall into a depressive state as a teenager. And it's not teenage angst. It could be that Atlas just putting so much pressure on the vagus nerve for a sustained period of time that they no longer are in fight or flight. They're in like help me mode.
Yeah. I mean, we should just do a whole episode on adolescence and teens, because I feel like we are failing the next generation of human beings so bad. We are failing them so bad. We are throwing so much crap at them, like so many pills, with the expectations we have on them, the screen time, the social media, the societal, everything that they have to deal with is not what we dealt with, or even the generations before us as teenagers. And honestly, like, it's kind of sickening, like, the way it's being handled.
I just heard an ad the other day for a class action lawsuit against Instagram by, like, for teenage girls for, yeah, like, body dysmorphia. And I was like, can adults also be in that class action lawsuit? Because how many adults are walking around?
I'm not saying that's right. I feel like there are so many layers to this, right? Oh, so many. Piece,
but I've personally seen a handful of kids come to my head in the last 3 years that were severely depressed, came to the office, and these are boys too.
Oh yes, the mental health status of female and male teenagers, or whatever gender they are associating with, it's alarming, and it's sad, and we're just
giving them. Just getting them adjusted, they were able to come out of their depressive state.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And like, it's, don't get me wrong, I love taking care of like everybody, but to have success stories like that, a teenage boy doesn't want to get out of bed in the morning, phenomenal athlete, but just like so depressed, starts getting adjusted 2 months later, totally different kid. Mom could cry. Like,
I do. There's actually a new book that I saw, somebody I follow that I love on Instagram. She just was reading this book by a physician, and I'm going to link it in the show notes, because it's all about how mood disorders, depression, anxiety, all of our mental health issues, like for a long time, they're blaming it on chemical imbalances. And there's all this research showing that it has absolutely nothing to do with chemical imbalances, and how we're treating it is like, that's, yeah, the approach is to try to balance like the chemistry in the brain. Like, so I'm going to link that here. I've not read it yet. I am not a mental health guru by any stretch of the means. But I think that would be a good resource for people if they're interested. It is something I do want to read. What else were you saying, Dr. Sarah? I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, everything in a chiropractic world, everything comes down to like structure dictates function. Mm-hmm. So if the structure is wrong, it's going to put pressure on the nerves, and then the body's not going to function correctly.
Function's going to be off. Yeah, it's like X plus y equals d, or, you know, like, it's just a simple equation that everyone can understand. I do want to say, just because, like, I'm big into, like, research and data and studies, I want to say there is a lot of research and there are a lot of studies and there are so much information now that you can go find on chiropractic care, mm-hmm. and the benefits and what it works for and how it works. So for people that are still uncomfortable or saying it doesn't work, or how could you possibly be making the claim like that it can do that, there are plenty of studies,
especially in the world of kids.
Yes,
there's probably more research outside of like low back pain for chiropractic in kids and pediatric care than like any other, because as a profession, or the people that actually deal with pediatric care, we're trying to make a bigger push towards the acceptance of full body optimal health care for people, and it starts with kids.
Right.
It starts with the pediatric population, because they're not coming in for pain. They're coming in with functional issues, and these functional issues are clearing up.
Well, and what I also want to tell everybody is, you know, you believe it, I believe it, we use it on our, you know, all of us on this podcast use it on our children all the time. You know, we come in regularly just for preventative care. But what I will say is, the second my children have any type of illness, which is not very often, but we might have a sniffle or a cough, we run to the chiropractor.
Like, good cough. I'm coming.
She's like, I just saw you. I'm like, we got a little congestion here. We're back. And I will tell you one adjustment, and because children respond so quickly with their nervous system, guys, it's like magic. It is literally magic.
Life sleeps so good after adjustments. Yes,
I cannot stress enough, like, how important it is and how awesome it's such a good tool in your toolbox. And we're not here to brag or anything like that. We just want you to have the knowledge and the tools in your toolbox to maybe go ahead and use it or try it sometime, because I promise you, if you stick with it, the results are amazing. And if you start with your children, you're going to see that sooner than maybe if you're an adult.
Oof, there's a really good statistic on this. And I can't think of the numbers, but it's like people who use chiropractors as their PCP or primary care physician have far less hospital visits than those that don't.
Well, I have a PCP for the kids and I will go there if I need to, but that, right. I mean, that's mainly like our.
No, I mean, like, meaning they're getting wellness and taking care of their body, so they do not need to go.
Yeah, you don't need a doctor. Yeah. I mean, our physician, like, he's very much in the holistic mindset. Yes, you know him. And he's all about that. And he understands, like, a lot of his patients are only coming for, like, well visits or, like, when they need him. But, like, he sees us once a year. Like, it's, you know, like, ridiculous. I'm like, okay, like, we're here for checkup. School paperwork. But it's insane to me, that shift that happens when you start to nurture your whole body and your systems using things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I would love to do a whole another episode on like the prenatal aspect of things.
I'm a big believer, guys.
Ladies, get into it.
If you are not aligned and adjust it regularly, especially towards the end of your pregnancy, and God, please find a Webster certified chiropractor. Certified. Yeah. Like, you will not only be more comfortable, but I mean, I'm just in the school of thought that it's extremely important for labor to have things in alignment.
It's like 60% less labor times.
Well, and babies need to be in a proper position, you know.
Quiet. Like I said, 50% of my pediatric consultation is about pregnancy.
Yeah. I lived on it during especially my second one.
I mean, if anybody listening to this, if you have questions about anything, you can always email at theempowerwomenpod@gmail.com and I will answer those questions.
What else? Is there anything else you want us to know, Dr. Sarah, or take away from this episode?
No, I feel like I talked about a lot and I'm not even sure.
Yeah, no, we covered a lot of good stuff. So we'll get the show notes together and hopefully somebody can benefit from this conversation.
Hope so. If not, at least maybe it'll get your wheels turning.
Yes.
If you're uncomfortable with, you know, where your child's at now and you run into some of these issues later, at least you've heard it somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. From someone that, like, you probably don't even live near me. This is just for you to know. And, like, take your business. I don't care, as long as your child is getting checked. That's what I tell people. I'm like, hey, if I'm too far for you, I don't care. Just see somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important that to me that you see someone, not that you see me. So
right, that you get care. And I mean, I like, my school of thought too is, like, as a practitioner, find somebody that resonates with you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, find somebody that you can connect with. I know that sounds like silly, but don't go to people that you don't feel like you can have some type of open relationship with regarding your care. I mean, I tell people this all the time. I'm at the point in my life where if I cannot have honest conversations with all of my practitioners, I'm not lying yeah. about where my baby sleeps, about what I want to do with them, about yeah. what I use for their health, about what I'm not using. Like, no, we are an open book, and we do not find people that we can't trust or connect with.
We have many a doctors in our office, and there are times that people are like, I never want to see so-and-so again. And I'm like, that's okay. And they're like, but I'm going to hurt their feelings. And I'm no. like, we don't care.
Nobody's feelings are hurt. Like,
your feelings are hurt. You just resonate with you.
Yeah. I know. I feel that way too. I'm like, look, if people look me up or they talk to me and they're like, oh my God, that girl, like, she's no way she's helping me feed my baby. Like, cool. There's a gazillion IBCLCs. Yeah. I'm not your person. It's all good. Yeah.
It's fine. I don't care. Like, it's fine. I personally do not care. I know, like, people I work with do not care. The people who take it personally, those are the ones you have to watch out for. Anyways.
All right, guys. Stay well. Go get adjusted.
Yes, I am going to get adjusted today. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, make sure you subscribe to the Empowered Women Pod and rate us 5 stars. Please feel free to also write a review on the podcast. It really does help to spread the Empowered Women message, and it moves us up in the podcast rankings. Plus, we love to hear from our listeners. You can follow us on Instagram at Empowered Women Pod, or if you have a question and want to reach out to Val or I, you can email us at empoweredwomenpod@icloud.com.